in a world where Chad Metz gets news from Warner Brothers Discovery that sends him into a tizzy, we live. Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. Yes, that's right. Folks, we are back and we are talking about movies as I am pulling my best Kevin Smith impression in a hockey jersey and a backwards hat. I am Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my good friend and chat and co-host,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Chad, the Batman lives. He is his own thing, and he has a spinoff show, multiple spinoff shows coming, but the first of which is coming to HBO Max. Oh, I'm sorry, Max, in the fall, named Penguin. Your thoughts are on the trailer for the very much grounded, very much in the world that Matt Reeves created, Penguin, starring Colin Farrell.
My first thought is that it is very much of the Matt Reeves world, very much of that Batman aesthetic, which, if you like that movie, that's a good carryover. And you can clearly see that they're making this a mob story, like this is a mob origin story, is what it is, set in that world. And the trailer made you feel that way. Made you feel like you're still in that world. Made you feel like you're still, but you were dealing more with the mob in that world. And if you like those kind of things, then I think you're going to do good. And if you like, I can't say if you like Colin Farrell, but if you like Colin Farrell, you should be good. But
I mean,
that's not Colin Farrell.
The last thing people saw Colin Farrell in was an Irish comedy about two dudes dealing with depression. So, like, this is more Kiss Kiss Bang Bang than it is.
Yeah, I thought of that while I was saying that. I'm like, that was the last thing people saw Colin Farrell in. It is certainly not this. And Colin Farrell is wrapped in the suit that makes him somebody completely different.
Hey, at least it's a suit.
Yes, it is a suit.
Unlike certain people who have Oscars on their mantle now.
I mean, that one was a suit too, but it also had other things. We're not going to go into that one. But it is this character. It is this Oswald character. But I think they really wanted to hammer home this is still in that same world. This is still in the same Matt Reeves world. And I think they did that. And I think they made it intriguing enough for people that if you liked the aesthetic of that Batman, you were already in. If you want offense about some things, if you like crime dramas, I think this is their way to pull you into that. Any way it goes, I think it's going to be a good show. I mean, I'm curious to see how it's going to turn out. But I think it was a good first trailer. They've only been shooting for like a month, so it's a very early trailer.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of that prison lineup scene that they showed at 2014 Comic-Con as a teaser for Guardians, because Guardians had only been filming for about a month, and that was the first thing they showed.
Yeah, you can feel elements of that, and they also put like kind of that back behind the scenes kind of thing on it, you know, showing like the little interview segments and like them setting up shots and that kind of stuff. So it was a nice way to say we're really early, but this is what is coming, and you can still feel the Matt Reeves Gotham of it all.
I mean, we left the character off with Maroni. No, was it? It wasn't Maroni.
No, it was Falcone that got
Falcone. Falcone being escorted away and taken off the books in a brilliant role played by a brilliant actor. But like, he was going to inherit the empire. That was the implication at the end of the Batman. And if you're going to bridge the gap between the Batman and the Batman Part 2, whatever it may be called, makes sense. And this is a really good way to do it. I'm really hopeful that they release this and it drives anticipation for the Batman 2. And we will know whether or not the Penguin is still on the board at the end of the series. But like, it serves as a good bridge point, because even if they release it now, you can go back and use it as a primer for Part 2 and get yourself amped up for that when that comes out. Which I'm kind of hoping they do the same thing with the Sisterhood, the Dune prequel, that they're doing for HBO Max, or sorry, Max, because that can get people reminded that there is a world of Dune and what the sisters are, and kind of get them ready for Dune Part 2, which is going to be a bigger, more epic movie than the original, than the first movie. So I'm interested to see what they do with the penguin. Farrell has a very different take from Cobblepot than what they did in the Gotham TV series, than what they did in the Burton movie. So I'm interested to see what this crime boss take on the penguin does, because it very much feels like an odd job type depiction of the character.
Yeah, this is, it's weird because it's probably the closest to the comics in the sense that he is like a crime boss, but in the comics he's more of a like refined, thinks of himself as like upper crust kind of crime boss, where this one he's like a typical New Jersey crime dude. Like he is comic penguin mashed up with like Sopranos characters, a Soprano stooge specifically, and boom, there you go.
See, I got that. You didn't see John Wick, but there's a character in John Wick Part 4 that very much feels like a combination of Kingpin, Oddjob, and Penguin. And, like, mobster character. And that can work, especially in that grounded, rooted world that Reeves painted. The biggest question for me is, where is he going with the sequel? Because Catwoman went off to Kathmandu or wherever she went to, you know, to stick it to the man, and Riddler and Joker hooked up in an insane asylum, but they didn't break out. So where are you going and what are you doing is the interesting part of that for me. But yeah, I was surprised that they even led with any kind of footage.
Yeah, I did not expect it, just because I knew it was so early. But, you know, well, they wanted to get people excited. I guess this was the way for them to do it.
Speaking of getting people excited, there are all kinds of nerds in my life who are on one end of the spectrum. They're either really happy or really sad that we are getting a Harry Potter television series. And no, not the Tale of the Three Brothers or any of the Tales of Beedle the Bard. No, we're getting a actual season-by-season adaptation of the books with a new cast, with recast adult characters, recast, you know, children characters, and a whole new timeline. So your thoughts, sir, on doing it this way and putting the final nail in the coffin of the Fantastic Beasts franchise after they had their best movie?
So in general, I think books deserve more time to breathe. So if you're adapting a book, no matter what, I think the more time you give it, the better the story translation is.
It's the reason the Lord of the Rings movies are 3 hours, sometimes four. Right.
Yeah, not every book needs to be made into a series, but some books are begging for that, especially if they're like serialized and continuing stories like Harry Potter is. So in general, I think it's a good idea. I think having a season lets you get some more of the details that you missed from the, particularly the later books, because they have to be adaptations at some point, so you can like make the story make sense within the confines of 2 hours. If you do, you know, 10 episodes, however you want to break it up, but you're giving it, you know, 6 to 10, 30 to anywhere from 30 to an hour in the time, you can get more of the little details that fans of the book have come to love. So in that thought, I understand why. I mean, let's not fool ourselves. Beginning, middle, and end for the reason they're doing this is money. Harry Potter prints them money. They like money.
I mean, does it print them money? Because Fantastic Beasts did not print them money.
See, but that's what I was going to say. The Harry Potter franchise proper has printed them money. When they've tried to spin off, it has not worked out as well. There could be various reasons. So what, I mean, we're dealing with, you know, studio execs, number crunchers. So they're like, well, let's go back to Harry Potter proper. How can we do it? Okay, we're not going to do, you know, continuing movies with these with the older actors. Let's go back to the books. How can we do that different? If we make it a series, we can be more true to the books, so people that like the books can come in and get re-immersed in a new way, but still familiar. I think it's a very smart thing to do. The question is going to be, is it too soon? Because the series just ended like 10 years ago. So it seems
Deathly Hallows Part 2 is 2012. So that's a straight up decade and 12 years ago.
Right.
And the thing was, you're like the only avenue to return to like Redcliffe and Watson and Grant weren't gonna reprise their roles unless it was Cursed Child, because that's really the only route of established canon to go. And right. I don't think you want to dance with Cursed Child. It's just a big ball of stuff that works for a stage play, but is a little bit convoluted and different for a mainstream audience to reconnect with those characters. It's best to leave it with the epilogue that you get at the end of part two, that you get at the end of the book, which is basically Harry, Ron, and Hermione at the train station with their kids. You get some information about what they've done in the past, what they've done since they've left Hogwarts, you know, who their children are and who their children are named after, but you don't go into all the crazy deep depths that you do with Cursed Child. Again, if you have that much trouble depicting Horcruxes on screen, I don't really think you want to drag yourself into Cursed Child. And that's just barring the price tag those three would even command for. This is the best way to go about rebooting the franchise. I would argue that if Secrets of Dumbledore would have been the second movie instead of the third movie, they would have made more money with the Fantastic Beasts franchise. They actually would have seen an uptake in their box office revenue, I believe, if they had done this movie second. Because the third movie is a better movie. It's just the way that Rowling and the way that David Yates and the screenwriters had set everything out, it was a 5-movie plan. And, like, there are filler episodes or filler movies in there, and you can't really do that. Like, the biggest connection to the mainframe universe was Dumbledore versus Grindelwald, and leading to the great duel that is depicted in or talked about, hinted at in Chambers and in Sorcerer's Stone, but really shown and talked about in depth in Half-Blood Prince, where it talks about Grindelwald and Dumbledore having a relationship, Grindelwald and Dumbledore falling apart. Grindelwald and Dumbledore getting into a duel, a spell being cast, Ariana getting hit, and basically becoming mental, and Dumbledore dealing with the gravity of not knowing who cast the spell that hit Ariana, and dealing with the grief of that going forward as an adult, and the way that it puts a strain on his relationship with Aberforth, his brother. The way that it puts a strain on him as far as guilt and remorse goes, and how that informs everything that he does with Harry going forward. The problem is you were leading to a wizarding war and you were leading to that confrontation with those two, but you were taking forever to get there. You can't take 5 movies to get there. You can take 3 movies to get there, but you can't take 5 movies to get there. And with as convoluted and as complex as the second movie was, it's really hard to get people on board with coming back after something like that. So that's why Fantastic Beasts died, and it's why this reboot lives, because now they've realized that this is the better way. And again, a way to bring eyeballs to me.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Fantastic Beasts has its own problem. But it also has, you know, the whole thing of a lot of Harry Potter fans are not really thrilled with the creator right now because of her views on
trans people. And that's a big thing. And even Daniel Radcliffe has had to come out and kind of distance himself from her. And she's not the best screenwriter. She can be a good, especially in this wizarding world, she can be a really good writer of books. But the thing about a book, as you well know, being a library sciences guy, is in a book, you can go back and read a chapter multiple times till you get it. In a movie format, you have about 15 minutes to get across the necessary exposition you need your audience to have in order to make the whole thing work. And so when you're delivering something as complicated as Horcruxes, you need multiple chapters in order to get that across. You don't have that kind of time, storytelling-wise, in a feature film. You just don't. And that was the disconnect. Was that, like, she had grand ideas and broad things that really would have worked on the page, but when you only have a little bit of story real estate to do it, doesn't work. Didn't work as well.
So, like, her views aside, which I don't really want to put them aside, because I think if they're still as prevalent now as they are when the show comes out, you'll still get some of the hesitancy with Harry Potter fans.
Yeah, she doesn't shy away from them talking.
Right. She actually looks for it a lot. So that's going to be a thing that follows this. But, you know, if it's good, people will be fine with it. They'll just not like her. But my question is going to be, how much involvement is she going to have? Because I think if it's like those other movies, she has final say. So that's why she did the screenplay and all of that stuff. But will she step back from doing the writing and maybe just consult? And will she have, like, final say on things?
That's what she did for the films. She was an executive producer, but she was not lead creative on the eight Harry Potter film. Like, Chris Columbus or David Yates or Alfonso Cuarón could go to her and talk to her about certain things. But at the end of the day, it was up to the screenwriters, the professional screenwriters, and her and those directors to make the decisions that they make about the film. I'm sure if J.K. Rowling had her way, Alfonso Cuarón would not have made The Prisoner of Azkaban be that he did. But, like, the concern that I have with something like a season-by-season, book-by-book adaptation is not casting. Because you can go find some unknown and put them up there, and they can make it their own. The issue that I have is there just aren't a lot of, like, big action set pieces and stuff that was missing from the films that were in the book. There's more, like, character stuff. There's stuff like, for example, Peeves. Peeves doesn't, like, is an intimate, like, he shows up with nearly headless Nick in the chamber in Sorcerer's Stone or Philosopher's Stone. He doesn't, like, show up in the movies until, like, Goblet of Fire. Like, because he's just a small, intimate character, you can cut him because it doesn't hurt the overall story. It's like Tom Bombadil in the Lord of the Rings movie. Like, you can cut the character, it doesn't do anything to the story. That's kind of the feeling I get with the doing it as a TV series, is, like, there's not a ton of, like, large action beats that you, like, cut from the movie, the book, in order to make the movie. Like, it's not like Lord of the Rings where you have this thousand-year mythology that you can just pull from and do different eras of. Whereas we'll talk about in a bit here Star Wars, where you can have different eras, you know, where you can have one person making a movie 25,000 years before the Skywalker saga and another person making a movie, you know, 15 years after Return of the Jedi, where he can circle jerk himself. You know, it's different with Harry. Like, there's a defined 40-year time frame there that has been, like even Fantastic Beasts starts in the 1920s. Like, you're not dealing with a large swath of time where you can just poke around. Like, the entire thing from Harry's birth and the death of his parents to the conclusion of Deathly Hallows is about 16 years.
It's a little bit longer than that, because I think he's like 18, 19. He's about 18, 19. Because it's supposed to be 1 year school, I forget how old he is when he starts.
12, I think.
But he's
12, 12 plus 7.
So, 12 yeah,
plus,
so he...
yeah, 12 plus 7 would be 19.
Yeah, so he's somewhere around there. Well, I think what they're going to lean on is that you get more character beats when you can do the TV series. You don't have to have...
yeah,
you don't have to have the action beats.
Yeah, you get more... get more time with Malfoy and Harry and establishing that relationship, that rivalry. Get more time with Ron, Hermione and Harry. You get more time to the Chin Chow and Harry romance that is specifically in book 4. Give a little bit more time to Boba Tons and the Russian school or the Belarusian in Goblet of Fire than what you got in the film. Like small things like that you can build around.
Yeah, and it's going to be on HBO, so they have a track record of doing this.
It's going to be on Max. It's not going to be on HBO directly. It's going to be on Max.
So I'm not going to get into how stupid it is to cut the Max off of this. I mean the HBO off of this. But if it's still in the same system as HBO, still touched by the same hands of the people of HBO, it'll be fine. Even if it's touched by the people that do the Max originals, to me they're one and the same, because I watched some of those Max originals. Their quality is right up there with the regular what you think of HBO shows. What's the
James Smart show that's been really good? Pilot
Hacks.
Hacks.
I love Hacks. So it's going to be fine. It'll be fine that way. It's just they gotta pull everything together, but they kind of specialize in this, so I have faith that they will. It's just to me, it's just a matter of how much J.K. Rowling is really gonna be like involved.
Yeah, I was a few other notes from the Warner Brothers Discovery news dump. I was excited to see that they are moving forward with Welcome to Jury, which is an It prequel. And that Machete is involved, and that the entire team from It Chapter 1 and 2 creatively is back involved. It's a prequel set in the early 1900s. Now, whether or not Skarsgård comes back or not, don't know. But I think that would be that'll be an interesting project for me to watch going forward, developmental-wise. Other than that, like the True Detective Season 3 looks really good. Season 4 looks really good. Jodie Foster leading the way this time. That looked good. The Last of Us getting renewed was like a no-brainer. Most of the other stuff that we got out of that seemed pretty standard and by the book.
Yeah, I didn't get to see a whole list, and it's hard to find a whole goddamn list. So I know there are other things that were said. Not so much pertaining to the things that I mean,
there was a DC voice cast list for an animated series.
Yes. What's that? Creature Patrol or whatever the hell this is called?
Doom Patrol?
No, not Doom Patrol. It's, hell. Creature Commandos. That's right. Since I looked it up, I guess I'll give you the people real quick. So it's going to be Sean Gunn as Weasel, Frank Grillo from Captain America as Rick Flagg Sr., Maria Bakalova as Princess Ileana Rustic, Idrina Varma as the Bride, Zoe Chow as Nina Murzowski, Alan Tudyk as Dr. Phosphorus, David Harbour as Eric Frankenstein, Sean Gunn as G.I. Robot, and Steve G is reprising his roles as John Economos from The Suicide Squad and Peacemaker.
Your thoughts, sir?
You know, it's I know most of them. It's really only interesting to me because I know that Gunn has said they're going to transition back and forth between animated and live action, and the actors they get will play both. So, seeing this cast, I'm not surprised. Most of these people have been in films before. Frank Grillo as Rick Flagg Sr. is, you know, pretty good choice.
Something that was called by our good friend Jim Vavida.
So, all in all, I guess the best thing I can say is cool. As I'm looking at it, it's interesting. The thing Another interesting thing is David Harbour is Eric Frankenstein, and he's also in the Thunderbolts. So, you know, I know Sean Gunn has done it, but he's coming over with James. Frank Grillo is pretty much done as Crossbones, but David Harbour is like actively in the MCU right now and is going to be actively in the DCU. So, you know, just something to say.
Yes, indeed, very interesting. I didn't see any updates on the Dune Sisterhood other than just that they were still planning on doing it and that they were supposed to start filming soon.
Ah, that makes sense.
All right, so before we hop into Celebration, let's talk about the Marvels. Chad, people have been waiting for actual footage from the Marvels. We actually got
footage.
Yes, I have seen a large contingent online, like, where is our footage? Does this movie actually exist? Is this actually a thing? And that they were rewarded for their diligence and their faith by a trailer that basically picks up where we left off with Captain Marvel in the Marvels. You know, your thoughts, sir, on Kamala Khan and Proton and Carol Danvers and all of the Nick Fury and everything.
Because the movie's not coming out till November now, I didn't expect to see a trailer for this, but it makes sense because Guardians is about to come out. Yeah. So you want to get a trailer attached in front of that. I get it. So I think for a first trailer, this is a very good trailer. If nothing else, this trailer should scream to you, this looks fun. And it really hangs on the characters that they know people really like. Know people are really, really charmed by Kamala Khan. Do a bunch of stuff with her. They know people like Photon from WandaVision. Let's do a lot of stuff with her. And I think they wanted to show a different side of Carol Danvers because apparently a lot of people don't like the character as portrayed in the MCU of Carol Danvers so far. I've never understood that.
You've gotten one movie in about 8 minutes combined between Infinity War and Endgame. So it's not a ton to go off of. It's just two bros who aren't very impressed with Brie Larson.
I'll be fair. I've seen some guys that I know and like have said similar things, and I know they're not dude bros. But it all comes down to people think she's unlikable. They think, for lack of a better term, she's a dick. But she's no more of an asshole than Tony Stark or Stephen Strange. It really does feel like it's because she is a woman doing things that if a man were doing it, I don't think they would have a problem with. Most of them actually like it. But because it's a woman, it rubs people the wrong way. So she has because she's a woman to be likable, she has to be not as, I guess, sarcastic and straightforward. She has to be more, just be softer on the edges, I guess. I don't know. And I don't know if they're going to actually do that. I don't think they should. I think the character Carol Danvers, I mean, she's a test fighter pilot after everyone told her no. And she did it, and she's good at it. So, yeah, she's got a chip on her shoulder, and she's going to let you know it because she is as good as she said she was. So how do you make, if people are complaining that that's not likable, how do you make it likable? I think, one, you pair her with Captain Marvel, and that can tone her down and still play to her strengths as a character. So I do think there'll be a slight change for Captain Marvel just to get them to stop complaining. But overall, I think if you watch this trailer, you should come away thinking that it was fun and thinking that you like at least two of the three leads. And by the time you see the movie, you should like everybody there. I think that's the kind of the job of this. And it gave us a little taste of the story, but just a little bit.
Are you surprised that they're leading with Secret Invasion in June instead of the fall?
I can't say, because I don't know. I need to see one or both of the... Once I see this one, after I've seen both of them and I've seen this one last, I guess I can make a better call. I don't know, because, you know, I mean, yeah, it feels like this movie should be before Secret Invasion. Because last time we saw real Nick Fury, he was up in space, and Secret Invasion looks like it's him coming down, dealing with stuff. And I don't know. I really need to see them to make a better judgment. But I can see where people would be like, yeah, Secret Invasion should come after this, just from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I mean, my thing would be it would still come in the fall, and it would still lead into the movie, but it would explain some of Nick Fury's absence, because it's very clear in Far From Home that he is on vacation. He is up in the S.W.O.R.D. facility doing S.W.O.R.D. things. And so him having come back to Earth would be an interesting twist, especially considering whether with the whole thing with Secret Invasion is who is legit and who's not. And now that we know that Talos and other Skrulls have replaced Nick Fury over the course of recent years, does that mean that the Nick Fury we've been seeing in all these trailers and footage from Secret Invasion is the Nick Fury, or is if it's just another Talos or insert your Kree person here? And I think that can play into some things going forward, leading directly into Captain Marvel. But I also think, or the Marvels, but I also think that it is a blessing in disguise not to be running Jonathan Majors out there right now to answer questions on the press tour for Loki.
Oh yeah. You gotta let things cool down.
Dear sir, please fire your representation.
Maybe he has, because they've been real quiet.
You fire your representation and maybe or maybe not, you know, get mental health care.
Real wild.
My favorite thing from the trailer, though, was Kamala Khan watching the cat do its thing. That was my favorite part of the whole, because it's like you forget that the cat isn't, and then it reminds you very quickly. And her reaction is just priceless.
Yeah, she's... I think she's going to be a standout again. I think people just love her. And
I mean, Feige has said that. The composer has said that. Like, everybody who short of Nia DaCosta, that's talked about this film has said that, like, Kamala Khan steals the show.
Yeah, she is. I fully expect that she will.
So, Chad, let us move to the celebration, the Star Wars celebration that will not emanate in 2024, but will re-emanate from Japan in 2025. Your thoughts, sir, on all of the cavalcade of information about Star Wars that we got from Celebration that did not include a renewal of the Book of Fett or Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Well, when you talk about those omissions, I'm not as surprised.
I mean, they had a panel for Obi-Wan, but it was a retrospective panel. It wasn't like a and now we're going to announce season 2 panel.
Well, yeah. The reception to both of those were softer than I'm sure they would have liked. I did see something where Ewan says he's open to doing it. And Kathleen Kennedy is like, you know, let's slow down here real quick. So I understand those were there.
Kathleen's exact quote was, "We are not an active developmentalist."
And it makes sense because of the things that they did announce that they do have going on. And they are, it looks like they're trying to focus a little bit more on movies because they, we basically walked out with three of them. Dave Filoni's movie, which has been described as kind of like a culmination maybe of what's been done on TV so far with the Mandalorian stuff and the Book of Boba Fett stuff and all of those and Ahsoka that's coming. All those coming together. I did see somebody say that movie's probably going to be a Disney Plus movie. I don't know how much stock I put into that. They have made Disney Plus movies, but they haven't really made something of a Star Wars caliber. Strictly Disney Plus movies. So.
There's no way you're doing that for Disney Plus. Like, those movies you save for the theaters. It's not Jungle Cruise, man. Like, it's not Jungle Cruise, it's not Haunted Mansion. You're not going to put that movie on Disney Plus. Like, that is a... Look, I made the jerking off motion there because, like, that has been my thing for, like, the last year and a half, is that every single bit of this seems like Jon Favreau had an idea, Kathleen Kennedy introduced Jon Favreau to Dave Filoni, and Dave Filoni used and abused Jon Favreau's idea as a vehicle to create his own live-action universe. The man, like, you could have gone to Hollywood, California, and pulled people from the side of the road on the Walk of Fame and asked them who Bo-Katan and Ahsoka were 4 years ago, and they would have looked at you like you had, like, green paint on your face. Instead, now here we are, 4 years later, and Bo-Katan and Ahsoka and Grogu are bigger names than they ever were. And to kind of hint around that The Mandalorian Season 4 is going to lead directly into this movie, to have Grand Admiral Thrawn now coming into the picture, to have Filoni talking about how important Thrawn is to everything they're doing going forward, it all points to poor Jon Favreau having his idea of a Lone Wolf and Cub movie, TV show, being hijacked by Mr. Filoni, deciding he had a perfect off-ramp to bring his nerd culture, his animated nerd culture, or as the great minds of the Empire podcast call it, the blah blah. He has taken the blah blah and made it official canon and made it relevant. And so now he's doing bringing all of his people live action. And that's all this is. And that kind of pisses me off because it's just like, it's not accessible. It's just not. Like, you have to, like, can you really enjoy Mandalorian Season 3 if you don't know jack shit about Mandalore, about the Night of the Thousand Tears, about the Moff Gideon, about Bo-Katan, about the Darksaber? Can you enjoy anything from the Ahsoka trailer if you've never seen an episode of Rebels, you don't know what the Ghost Crew is, you don't know who Grand Admiral Thrawn is and all his blueness, you don't know who pink purple haired lady is? Like, you know, I can go watch Book of Boba Fett because I know who Boba Fett is because he was in Empire and Jedi, and I just know Boba Fett. And the series doesn't do any benefit to the character at all. In fact, does more of a detriment to him. But it's not heavy-handed on any other exposition of anything else going on until, you know, the Mandalorian comes in and hijacks the last two episodes. You know, it's Filoni getting his own movie just feels like a giant F you to whatever Jon Favreau was going to do originally, and feels like a giant ass reward for bringing his animated features live action. And there's just a large part of me that feels like if you'd have gone this route on ABC in 2014 to 2018 and then concluded it with a movie the way you're doing now, people probably would have, the diehards, the people who were the most angry about The Last Jedi, the people who are the most angry at Kathleen Kennedy for all the things that have happened with the features, those people would have been praising her to the hilt because they got their thing and they got it in a mainstream way. And that's what bothers me, is that those voices are being propped up, encouraged, and vocalized by the fact that their Legends canon and their animated Clone Wars and their animated Rebels and all those things are now so live action. Whereas, you know, in 2015, it was The Force Awakens and starting things off with Rey and on from there.
Okay, so, you know, I've heard the kind of the most interesting thing I got from there is, you know, you're saying that the Filoni stuff isn't accessible. Now, I being in the position I am, I haven't watched any of the animated stuff. I watched like 10 episodes of Clone Wars. It's really slow for the beginning and it's hard for me to like get going into it. But I can acknowledge that I am aware of all those characters, but just aware of them before The Mandalorian. I watch The Mandalorian all the time. So am I getting, like, so my brother has watched all that anime. Am I getting the same experience as he is? No, because he's deeper into it. But I don't think it's inaccessible. For me, it's akin to, especially early on with like the Marvel movies. Those movies didn't follow any particular storyline, but I knew who certain characters were. I knew what certain things were. So when they showed up, I'm like, ooh. And the person next to me is like, I don't know. But they sat there and they got it. Eventually got it over time. And I think these shows act like that. I don't think they're inaccessible. I do think if you know the stuff, it's more enhanced. But everything you need to know, they explain to you. Especially because they have that little opening of every show where they go back and explain stuff to you. And every one of those, whatever they show you, is important to the episode you're about to watch. And in turn, is important to the overall thing. So I'm not as up in arms about Filoni getting stuff. I see the argument. Don't agree with the argument. I think you know what you need to know if you watch the live action
shows. Yeah. If you watch the recap, you get it. But my thing is, like, there were no elements of that crap in phase one, in season one of The Mandalorian. Like, it was what it was intended to be. It wasn't until it became successful and became a household thing in a must-watch series every week that Mr. Filoni walked his little way and hijacked everything. And then you get the Bo-Katan, and then you get the Ahsoka, and then you get the Luke Skywalker doing his green lightsaber thing and making every, you know, fanboy drool, and Dark Troopers, and Darksaber, and Moff Gideon, and all of the things. You don't have any of that in season one. Like, it very much seems like he hijacked the thing and turned it into his own deal and is now going to get a movie out of it, which, like, season one is much more accessible to lay Star Wars fans than seasons two and three are.
So season one is akin to Iron Man outside of the last scene in Iron Man. Yes, there are things in it, but you don't do all the things up front. You have to build and earn to it. So they make the show. Now, Filoni is a part of the show the entire time. So I don't think he hijacked anything. I think the plan was, let's introduce this part of the world in this galaxy. And once we establish it, then we can bring in things that might be familiar to other people. And not in the larger Star Wars universe, because we want to build to that. But other people that know these other properties and go from there. So
you're making the Thor's hammer. You're making the Thor's hammer a logic there. You know, Coulson telling Stark in Iron Man 2 that he has to go to New Mexico and, you know, talk about this, you know, Norwegian god that has come to Earth and things like that. Hints about Thor that are in Iron Man 2. Cap's shield being used as a balancing part for Tony Stark's, focused beam for his little thing in the chest piece, like things like that. Where, you know, you may not know that that's Captain America's shield, but like there are people who do know that that's Cap's shield, and it makes them mark out and cheer and applaud. It just kind of feels like the Mandalorian stopped being The Mandalorian and just started being Star Wars animated live action. And I don't know how that resonates with Jane Doe in Des Moines, Iowa.
I mean, I'll give you that the show feels like it has changed some. I did think that because the first season was more your standard Western, the Western hero does random things with random people. But I do think the plan all along was to do more of this stuff. Once Favreau and Filoni got together, it's just one of those things is, do you like and appreciate using characters that were established for a period that not every Star Wars fan was in? However, do they translate to over to another medium where more people will see them? And I think that would be like the true test. Do people like these characters? For the most part, I think they do. And I think they'll do well.
And none of us know what Disney Plus viewership is.
Yeah. Well, if this movie's going to theaters, then it's an opportunity to see for a regular theater crowd. And I think they'll be fine. I think they'll do well.
So talk to me about James Mangold taking us 25,000 years into the past, into the Old Republic, into the birth of the Jedi.
All right. So yes, James Mangold, he who has finished or is finishing Indiana Jones and is supposedly writing a
What is that great Jeremy Renner gif from Endgame? Don't give me hope. Don't give me hope, man.
Yeah.
Don't give me the hope that you're feeding me in these trailers. Just don't.
I'm laughing because, again, visual medium, Brian is giving a thumbs down as I say Indiana Jones.
We'll see in July, but in June, but I'm very, very much like, don't give me hope, because this looks good. It looks fun. It looks adventurous. It looks like Indiana Jones getting his final victory lap. But, like, I also thought that way about the Kingdom of the Aliens and, you know, how how the atomic fridge turned out.
Yeah. But, Mango might be saving Indiana Jones, and then after that he's going to, I guess before, see, I don't know his schedule, but I guess he's doing this before Swamp Thing, but I don't.
He's only writing Swamp Thing as far as we're aware.
I thought they said he was directing it too, but, you know, crazier things. But he's going to be doing a Star Wars movie set in the Old Republic. We don't really know much else about it, but the Old Republic is a beloved period for Star Wars people. It deals with the time when there were galaxy was plentiful with Jedi. The Sith operated in the dark as they always do, but the Jedi kind of had a reign on things until they didn't. So it's telling that story.
Yeah, it's where you dig into holocrons and the Sith versus Jedi wars and the Force, the Book of Wells, the Well of Souls or whatever it is, and something then like yeah, and then you're dealing with all that kind of stuff that is hinted at in Last Jedi, but not really fully fleshed out, because Luke does mention the heritage of the Jedi, the journey of the Wells, and that, but. Yeah, it's a very much old, you know, not unexplored region. It's, you know, the most famous thing to come from it is the Knights of the Old Republic video, which people have wanted a adaptation of that video game / expanded universe novels for a very long time, and that feels like what they're doing. And it establishes a working relationship with the filmmaker that they trust. For better or for worse, they trusted J.J. That's why they went back to J.J. for Force Awakens. Like, for better or worse, they trusted him, and they liked working with him. Can't say the same for Lord Miller. You know, it very much feels like they know Filoni, they know Mangold. Both are trusted voices. Both are trusted folks that they know can get the job done and work with them in a positive way. And so that's why they're getting the gigs.
If nothing else, I think it speaks highly of what they think of the new Indiana Jones movie, that they they let him have this. So come on over, let me keep you in the fold, and let's do this thing. So again, hope for you. I know how you feel about that.
I mean, everything I've seen has been positive. you know, but the last movie had Cate Blanchett in it, and it still sucked. You know, so he's an Academy Award nominated director who, whatever you want to say about him, has directed one of the best comic book movie adaptations, period, in Logan. Even if it is up his own ass.
It is.
Yeah. And that he has that to his resume, and he has multiple Academy Award nominations. So keeping that guy in the fold makes sense. Especially if you like what he's done with Indiana Jones, which, you know, means he has the approval of Harrison Ford.
Yeah, but do you need a lot of approval since he actually likes Indiana Jones and hates everything else?
Yeah, he told Chris Pratt to go to hell, so. Taking this one to the grave, kid.
Cranky old ass man.
As long as the cranky ass old man doesn't fly a plane, we're all good. So talk to me about the big, big, big surprise of the panel, of the celebration, which would be not Acolytes, not any animated thing, not any live action thing, except for what we can all presume will eventually be titled Episode 10.
That's really my only question with it is, like, are we going to stick with the
She said the crawls are coming things? Back. She said the crawls are coming back, and there's only one reason to bring the crawls back.
So the big news was that the third Star Wars movie would follow Daisy Ridley's Rey Skywalker, in quotes, in a new movie yeah, whatever.
That's another thing I love about the Empire podcast. They just continue. There's two of the three of them that just act like Force Awakens, that Rise of Skywalker never happened. And so, like, when this week's Mandalorian happened, they had to talk about cloning and about Snoke and about the Emperor, and somehow the Emperor has returned and all that. They were just like, what is this shit? What are you talking about? This never happened.
Denial is not just a river. Yes, it happened. As much as we don't like to admit it, I've only seen crap. I think I've only seen it once, and I don't plan on seeing it again. But yeah, I'm curious about the whole setup of this Rey movie. It's going to be in the shadow of the other three.
A continuation. That's yeah. They all but said it's a continuation. It, you know, that she's setting up a Jedi temple. She's reestablishing the Jedi Order. It's set 10 to 15 years after Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
You know, time has passed. It allows for a perfect opportunity for John Boyega to come back as Finn. Gives time for Oscar Isaac to come back as Finn, as Poe Dameron. And they can offer them both enough money to make them agree to come. And
I don't know about John.
Well, John, I think, would be more agreeable than Oscar. I think Oscar has other things he wants to do. Finn, John's been like on the margins since then. The only thing that he's really done of any consequence was the Woman King, where he had that brief part in the beginning. And then he's finally, with Joe Cornish, got an Attack the Block sequel done, which is great, because I love Attack the Block, and I'm interested to see where they go with that. But, like, he's basically verbalized some of the same things Daisy has, and Daisy's back. So, you know.
True, and Daisy did get it.
Worse.
Yeah, I would say so. But
even though JJ didn't do John any favors by putting him front and center in the very first frame of the very first trailer for Force Awakens,
right? But I don't think he'll. I'm not gonna say never, but if he comes back, it's gonna take a whole lot, and I don't think it's high on his list to do.
See, I think all they have to do is hand him his own lightsaber, and he's.
I mean, that is probably very tempting. I think it'll take a little bit more.
But I mean, do you believe it's 10, or do you believe there's no real way to continue that story without it being 10, 11, and 12?
I mean, we've never had a like a proper sequel story starring anyone from the from any of the trilogies. It's always been like someone new here, somebody else over there. Well, so
it's the prequel trilogy, and it's the original trilogy, and then it's the sequel trilogy. And none of the original trilogy characters or actors outside of Vader appear in the prequel trilogy. And the three originals from the original trilogy show up in the sequel trilogy, but they don't carry over past that. I mean, maybe they're doing one movie to see how it works and then decide if they want to do 11 and 12, but, you know, they're just working with directors again that they trust and creatives that they trust, so maybe? I don't know.
Maybe. It is the question for me coming out of Celebration.
How much money do you think they had to offer her to come back?
Oh, a substantial raise. Substantial. So she's probably making like seven figures.
Well, my thing with her is I feel like for her it was deeply personal. But I also feel like she didn't want to end up being Mark Hamill, in the sense that while Hamill is a beloved guy for the Joker voicing and some of the other voice work and cameo work that he did after Return of the Jedi, there's that famous story about him going to audition for Amadeus and Spielberg turning him down because he was like, why do I want Luke Skywalker in my serious Oscar movie? And as much as I love Death on the Nile, it really does seem like her serious career has been kind of pushed to the margins a bit. And this is a way for her to A, make more money, and B, get her name back out there again, and hopefully redeem it from some of the stuff that that happened. And so, like, I get the feeling that her career post Rise of Skywalker hasn't been as successful, and that this is an opportunity she's looking at to jumpstart it. So that she doesn't just have to be somebody on the con circuit collecting $250 an hour to, you know, sign autographs.
Yeah. I mean, I can see that. I don't think her... I mean, she hasn't done much since Death on the Nile. So this will be a good another payday for her. But I think she just... With most of them, I think she just needed time away from the character, time away from all the craziness that is being in a Star Wars movie. And now that she's let one, maybe it'll die down for her where she can, like, live a normal kind of life.
Yeah, she knows what to expect. But there's just that, to me, there's just that thing of, like, I want to go off and have a career. And Boyega has been pretty much the same way. I want to go off and have a career. And it just hasn't worked for either of them.
Well, with Boyega, I think he's kind of said that he's like, kind of over the studio stuff right now. So I think he's only searching out smaller projects. Like, he still likes the studio stuff to consume. He just doesn't want to do it right now. So I don't know, man. It's gonna be one of those things to see. But I think she'll be well received. I think she'll be received well enough by the fans. There's always gonna be that contingent that doesn't like her because, again, woman. But I think by the end of this, the best thing to come out of it is she'll probably have a better relationship with Star Wars people. And since that's going to always be a part of her life, that's kind of big.
Gets some of her, some of the bad taste out of people about her. But again, I kind of just feel like the book that, especially, she wanted to do a few more different things. Just didn't pan. But, like, and the thing with Boyega, This is my deal is Attack the Block 2 doesn't work without him being Rey, Finn in Star Wars. So I wanted to go through his act, you know, his John Boyega's filmography post his biography post Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker. Small Axe, which is a TV miniseries. He did a voiceover in a podcast series called Tomorrow's Month. He had a small role in Naked Singularity. He had a starring role in Breaking. And then, of course, the small role in Woman. So that's two starring roles since 2019. You have to factor in pandemic and all the rest of it with that. But prior to his Star Wars experience, he had made The Circle in he had made The Circle in 2017. He had made Detroit in 2017, and he had made Pacific Rim Uprising in 2018. And so that was all his in Star Wars experience and outside of Star Wars. Detroit, of course, being the Catherine Bigelow film that no one actually remembers happened, but it did happen. And another thing that I had forgotten about while scrolling through this was that he was in 24 Live Another Day, which was the movie in between I want to say season 6 and season 7 of 24, maybe season 7 and season 8 of 24. So
he was in it.
Yep, I forgot about that one. But yeah, I mean, it's The Circle, Detroit, and Pacific Rim Uprising. Yeah, he has three films in post production, three films in pre production. One of this, of course, being Attack the Block 2, which I'm very excited about because him and Joe Cornish did an amazing job with a very small budget on the first one. I'm anxious to see what they can do with the second one.
Yeah, you know, I've never seen Attack the Block, but I've heard a good thing.
So, Chad, that'll about do it for this week's podcast. You can keep up with this podcast on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
I am at The Mets Theory.
And our producer is at Grant L. Pletcher. And the podcast Twitter handle is at On The Brain Pod. So if you would like to shoot us some topics or discussion ideas, just feel free to DM us or hit the mention button and pop up in our mentions to the at. And we'll be sure to take a look at those. But until next time, we are back to talking about movies. So please listen, and we'll talk to you later.